Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, we finally know what Gwen's big secret is on Days, and it's that she is Jack's daughter. Now, we don't know on camera yet how this all happened. You and I know, but it will unfold over the next couple of weeks and will be great. But you know, what I find so interesting about this story is that Jack has been a character on the show. He's been used on and off since the 80s. And this is the first time he's getting a surprise child, which I feel is such a soap staple. And you know, you look at the story, it was such a long build when you think about it. Emily O'Brien has been on the canvas since early June of 2020. So the show really took their time, allowed her to do a lot of damage to the Devereaux family. And now it's gonna create some really interesting dynamics on the canvas between Jack and Gwen, Jack and Abigail, Gwen and Abigail, you know, the list goes on. And I also feel that we're going to get to see Matthew Ashford get more dramatic scenes, which to me is a good thing because I feel he's often been the comic foil in the past, and this will give him a chance to really show something different.
Yeah. You know, in the new issue, we actually did a photo feature on surprise siblings in soaps, and there have been a lot of them lately, like on Days. We've got Gwen and Abigail, but they're hot on the heels of Charlie and Trip. And GH just gave Laura 2 new brothers. And not only is the surprise adult child a tried and true soap staple, as you said, but I think there have been some classic stories that remind me of this Gwen-Jack beat. Since Gwen has clearly been on a mission to destroy everyone with the last name Devereaux, it made me think of Carly first coming to town on GH and being so hellbent on destroying the life of the birth mother who gave her up for adoption, Bobby. I'm interested in what the ripple effects will be here on Jack and Jennifer. And I'm also just really interested in seeing how the fans respond to the way it plays out. Like, will it make the audience more sympathetic to Gwen? I know you interviewed Emily O'Brien for the magazine, and she spoke about how much pressure she felt to deliver in those scenes and how much care she put into preparing for them. And I really appreciate that. You know, I think we as fans kind of know, like, this is the big moment that a story has been building to. And I think the actors can definitely sense that too. And I'm always interested in whether that gets in their head at all and how it influences the performance they give. Another big story moment playing out right now is Olivia finding out the truth about Ned and Alexis sleeping together on GH. And I had that very conversation with Lisa LoCicero, who plays Olivia. And she told me how nervous she was about, you know whether everything she was hoping to play and convey as Olivia in those moments would actually come across to the audience. You know, I think if I was an Emily O'Brien or a Lisa LoCicero going to set on the days that we're talking about, I would be an absolute nervous wreck.
Oh, me too. I mean, I can't imagine the pressure of knowing that you have to go to work and deliver, and not only deliver, but do it in a very time-sensitive fashion. You know, with COVID protocols and the new reality, you know, actors don't get to rehearse in the same way anymore. We've had multiple people tell us that they either meet outside to do it, or I know Days has an app similar to Zoom for the actors to, like, quote unquote, meet and talk through the scenes. But really, the first time they're seeing each other in the flesh is when they get to the stage. And that must bring its own sense of, you know, urgency and stress. So, like, kudos to all of them who pull it off the way they do. But, you know, I am totally on board for this Gwen and Jack story because, you know, I'd like when you can take an established family and find a workable beat that jibes with past story they've told and create a whole new dynamic. I've said many times that I'm all for introducing new characters, but only if they can be merged into tales with established, beloved characters we already know. I mean, I would argue that the majority of people watching soaps today are longtime viewers. I have not had a lot of people tell me that like they just picked up soaps for the first time in their lives. Could they have picked up a new show? Sure. But for the most part, the viewers want to see their faves, and Ron Carlovati has found a really great way to do all of that through Gwen.
Yeah, you know, I really do think that soaps have to tread carefully and be really purposeful when it comes to introducing new players. You know, new characters are inevitably going to take a certain amount of airtime away from characters that viewers are already invested in. So it becomes a question of whether the presence of these new characters provides the established characters with something meaningful to do or not. When I think about like the most successful new additions in recent years, we can say just that about them, you know, like YNR's Elena, for example, was a great value add because Devon needed a love interest. And going back a little bit further, I think General Hospital's Chase, whose portrayer, Josh Swickard, is our guest today, likewise came in at just the right time because Ryan Pavey was exiting as Nathan, and that meant that Dominic Zampronia's Dante needed a new partner on the PCPD. You know, and then he was revealed to be Finn's brother and Nell's ex-lover, which gave him two solid connections to the canvas to work from.
You know, and as I recall, we weren't hit over the head with him, like from the get-go. The show integrated Chase carefully. And now, as you mentioned, he does have Finn, but he also has Gregory and Jackie and, you know, love interests, intrigue, drama. And I'm invested in him because he was well-conceived and in his introduction and subsequent tales were well executed.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt, you know, that Josh has like genuine star quality and charm and is pretty easy on the eyes.
Oh, that too.
Yeah. Now, General Hospital fans have known all of that about him pretty much since day one. And now a lot more people are in on that secret because the Netflix movie that he starred in with his wife, Lauren, A California Christmas, became a huge hit for the streaming service over the holiday season. And I am so happy that we get to chat with him today. So let's get to it. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How's it going with you?
So good. Good to be here.
Yes, we're very, very happy to have you. So Josh, you grew up in a fairly small town in Southern Illinois as the only son in a family with three daughters. Your father is a preacher and your mother is a voice teacher. And you once told me that pretty much the only rebellious thing you ever did was steal your dad's beer when you were 16.
I told you that?
You did tell me that.
Oh my God.
So the question that this all prompts is, how did a nice, normal, well-adjusted young man such as yourself end up as an actor?
That is a great question. From what I understand of PKs, like pastors' kids, is you got to watch out for them. Like they're usually the rowdy kids. So we somehow got lucky. But both my parents were in the arts. My first job, paid job, I was a singer, and it was called the Muddy River Opera Company. And it was, my parents were in an opera company. And so I was the newsie that ran out and sang something in Italian and ran back, and I got paid, you know, $100 or something. But, so I just kind of grew up in the world, and it was in the Midwest. And let's see, I had a girl that in high school that was a model. She was a friend of mine, and she was like, I have a Target casting in Chicago. Will you take me? And my mom let me skip school for some reason and drive this girl to Chicago and go to the casting. And while I was there, the modeling agency said something. And they're like, oh, stick around and blah, blah, blah. And so I modeled for a couple of years while I was in college up there. And then an acting coach came to Chicago and reached out to the modeling agency and said, hey, is anyone interested in acting? And I grew up doing a lot of theater. And I was like, sure, I'll take a class. And I worked with him once, and he said, forget everything you've ever learned about acting. You're horrible. And I was like, oh, okay. and
great start.
It was just like, yeah, it was an odd character. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't, you know, trained in any way really other than theater, which is very, very different. And so he came back 6 months later, and I was like, I'll try one more time. And the character breakdown was like 18-year-old kid, Midwest boy, blah, blah, blah. It was me. And so I went, and he was like, man, have you ever thought about moving to LA? I think I had $5,000 or $6,000 in my name. And I was like, let's do it. And so I told my parents, and they're like, we love you. We, you know, we verbally support you and hope you make it, you know? And so I hopped in my Hyundai and just, I drove out to LA, and that was in 2014, rather recent. I came out in 2011 for a couple years to, or for a couple months to sign with my team. And then went back to Chicago because I was working more there, and then came back for good in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you have any really memorable gigs as a model?
No. I mean, I never had that life of, oh, that editorial and a beat, you know, like I wasn't that guy. I actually, thankfully, what pays is e-commerce. What if you wanted to make crazy money modeling, you rode that Kohl's, Sears, Bon-Ton train, and they'd come, you'd come back, you know, once, twice a week, and you could ride that all the way to the bank. And so I had a couple decent years where I kind of just did catalog. I mean, really cheesy, you know, kind of stuff. But it was so fun. I wouldn't change the experience for anything. Every little life experience I've had, I've pulled so much from it, and it's made me such a grateful person. So yeah, I look back on the modeling days and I smile at it. I think it was great.
Mm-hmm. So when you did move to LA, you'd had some like big city experience from being in Chicago, but was LA sort of its own animal? Was it a culture shock?
Yeah. Yeah. Being in Chicago was kind of a buffer to it, you know, seeing a big city and whatnot. But, It definitely is, and it's still a culture shock. I mean, I've been out here, I don't know, 8 years, and I still look around, and it bothers me sometimes that a $9 smoothie is normal here. You know, like, there's things that I still go, that's not normal. Don't let that become normal, Joshua. You know, and so yeah, at times it's a little weird, But it's one of those cities, it's hard to move, you know. My wife and I talk, you know, like one day let's move here, let's do Nashville, or, you know, and we kind of brainstorm and be closer to family. But it is a hard city to leave when you can hike and surf and ski 2 hours away, and it's all right there. So it's odd, and it's definitely a culture shock, but we enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had your buddy Michael Mueller, who plays Kyle on Young and the Restless, on the podcast a few months ago, and we heard about the roots of your friendship, but tell us your version of how you two met.
Oh, shoot. What if it's completely different?
that would be fun.
I think we met at Wilhelmina Modeling Agency in LA, and we were signing our little contracts the same day, and the way I have the memory in my head I made a joke to our agent, and I said, it's good you snagged me. I was about to join the military, and I actually was close to joining the military, and I took the ASVAB, and I was so excited, and a lot of men in my family did it, and I just thought that was going to be a route for me. And after I said I was going to join the military, I hear this like thick Southern accent behind me. He's like, no way, I wanted to too, but my mama wouldn't let me. And I turned around, and it was Mueller. And he was like, I don't know, 17, 18 years old. And he had just done a Abercrombie thing. And that kind of like helped him get into that world. And I think after that, he has a better memory than I do. But I think after that, we may have talked for a little bit. And then there were a few castings that were far away in LA. And so we got each other's number probably. And I think we were like, hey, let's carpool to this casting. Let's carpool to that casting. But yeah, he and I, like, we really did come up together. Not that we're up anywhere right now, but we grew up, you know, there were a lot of, you know, teenagers playing video games in our, you know, studios. So it's really fun to be sharing this experience with him.
Yeah. He really did, to be clear, kind of start stalking you, I have to say. I mean, you worked at SoulCycle, then he worked at SoulCycle. You got a soap, then he got a soap.
No. I dragged him to SoulCycle. He was like at working out at Equinox and just buff as could be. And I was like, hey, come to my group fitness class. I'm teaching and it's going to be fun. And he was like, no, you know. And then finally, like, I'm like, you're my friend. If you don't come, I'm going to be sad. And so he came, and the second my class ended, like, all the corporate people at SoulCycle were like, oh my gosh, who is your friend? And I was like, here we go. His name is Michael. Yeah.
Well, I know that as you were, you know, finding your way in the business, working there was a big deal for you. And I just think it's so funny that another instructor at the time was Brianna Nicole Henry, who now plays your boss, Jordan, on General Hospital. Were you like shocked when you saw her at the GH studio?
Yeah, I remember the day they tested that role, and there were three or four women that came in, and she was in the hair and makeup chair, and I was just like, shut up. And it was cool because I think Frank like walked into the hair and makeup right around when she, and he saw us and he knew our friendship. But contrary to that, like we vibed really well, and she's a stellar actress. But yeah, it's such a weird, when you see how many people go up for these roles, that the world can still be that small is fun. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now you made your TV debut, if I have the timeline right, on Liv and Maddie for the Disney Channel, where you recurred as Todd Stetson. So what was that experience like?
That was awesome. That was so cool. It was, I got the call. I was driving up to Mulholland on Beverly Glen, and my manager called me, and I moved out January of 2014, and that was June of 2014. And she called me and she goes, "We did it, buddy." And I was like, and I was just so much emotion. And it was only supposed to be one episode, but still just booking a real job, you know? And it was, I was so strapped on cash. And I remember it was so funny because my car broke down on the way there. And I didn't have the money to fix it, but I'm filming this big, you know, cable television show. And it was such an odd experience. Man, they were such a good crew. They'd already been going for a while. I think I came on maybe the second or third season. And so they already had that familial kind of vibe, but it was so special because it was Disney. So it's just everyone's running up and hugging each other and giving piggyback rides. And if somebody on set, they would like just scream through the hair and makeup or through dressing rooms. And like, "Hey Joey, where you at?" Or, you know, and just joking around 99.9% of the time. And for that to be your first experience is very lucky. And so I still talk to them every blue moon, and they're all killing it doing their own things. And so, yeah, it was, couldn't have asked for a better first job.
So another one of your early jobs ended up being extremely significant for other reasons, but you, filmed a movie called Roped, and on the set, you met your beautiful wife, Lauren. Did you guys start dating right away? Like, what was the beginning of your love story?
We kind of knew going into it that is a common thing for two actors to feel some type of way. And, you know, so we both kind of recognized that. And we definitely had a spark while filming, like, no doubt. But once filming ended, we took a few weeks, and we were like, let's just not really talk to each other much and breathe. And I think after about a month, I called her and we started dating, and within 3 months, I was like, "Oh, she's my wife." And so I remember calling my dad, and I was like, "Dad, she's the one," but it's only been 3 months. And my dad said, he goes, "My advice would be know a girl in every season." So I waited 4 seasons. I waited a full year or a year and a couple months, and popped the question. But yeah, it was that movie again, a very tight-knit crew. The production company had worked on, I think, 11 films together. So the whole crew was family. And so weekends were riding motorcycles through Napa. And I mean, it was probably an insurance nightmare, but we were just fun. And went to a Sting concert, and, you know, a day before film. I mean, just like, it's just so sweet. But yeah, that movie definitely changed my life for the better. So,
mm-hmm. And I love Dad with the great advice.
Yeah, totally. Coming through.
Right. Now tell us your General Hospital casting story. You originally auditioned for the role of Peter. Am I right?
I think so. I actually can't confirm that. I auditioned for a different role, and so I was kind of process of elimination. It wasn't this role. It was something else, and it was right around, I think, when Wes came on the show. So my brain assumes that. But yeah, it was a reporter of sorts, were the sides and, or the script. And, I was filming Roped while I got the call, and I kind of flew down in the middle of the night, had no sleep, the test was just horrible. And I genuinely said, people are like, oh, it couldn't be that bad. It was that bad. And Frank, thank the Lord, he was just so kind and he understood my situation and kind of what everything was. And so they spliced together a bunch of different takes from the test to send to the network, because I don't know if I made it through once. And I borderline left saying, sorry for wasting your time, you know? And they didn't hear back. I went straight back that within the hour to, I flew back to SF to finish ropes. And after a week, I didn't hear anything. And I was like, you know, it wasn't meant to be, you know, the right door will open at the right time. And came back a month or two later, one of the actors, Pavey, was leaving the show and they were like, well, we need a cop. And it kind of came down to, oh, we kind of like that guy. And so they called me and that was that. And I got the offer and signed on the dotted line and the rest is history.
That's so funny. Do you remember when you went in for your audition, since it was like for a story that you didn't really end up in, did you work with different people who were like strangers to you, but you now know as castmates?
Oh yeah. Well, I wasn't familiar with daytime at all. I didn't know the world. I grew up with three sisters, so I knew chick flicks and Disney, and that's all I knew. And so I tested with Steve and Finola, and I didn't know Steve, Finola, or Frank. And I'm in the room with all three of them, and I thankfully didn't know who they were, or else I probably would have been even more nervous than I was. And they both came into my dressing room at different times. Hey, do you want to talk about it? Do you have any questions? Just relax, have fun. You know, they were just such stars, you know? And now obviously my dressing room shares a wall with Finola and Steve. I texted 30 minutes ago. So.
Awesome. Now, is it the first time you had tried out for a soap?
I think I tried out. I don't know if I tried out for GH before or not. And just completely crap the bed. I think I went in for Bold once.
Okay.
That's a good question. I've never actually, I think once or twice I'd tried out for a daytime show.
When the time was right, it was clearly very right. So who were your like first buddies in the cast? Like as you were getting adjusted, who do you remember helping to show you the ropes?
I remember they were celebrating a milestone, like 14,000 episodes or something. They were celebrating something. And so they called my second day, they called everyone to the stage. And rarely, everyone's doing their own thing. You have your own storyline. So you're in hair and makeup on your own, your dressing room, up on the stage. So I can, you know, Donnell and I can brush shoulders, you know, 20 times and almost not see each other because if we're not in the same storyline, you know. So it was the second day and they brought everyone up and I'm kind of standing there in the back and Haley Aaron came up to me and she was like, hey, you're new. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, let me show you around. And she completely introduced me to everybody, showed me how to get from the stage to the hair and makeup to dressing rooms and, you know, just so many different things. And so I still thank her mentally, you know, just for like helping me but everyone was cool. It was one of those things that it's awkward your first day of school. Because everyone has their, you know, everyone's talking and laughing and you kind of want to be a part of it, but you don't know them well enough to just walk up. And so it's junior high all over again. And then over time, months go by and, you know, y'all become friends and we really are. It's a tight group. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, your brother on the show is played by Michael Easton. So tell us about your real life relationship with him.
It's great. I mean, we don't hang out much outside of GH. We talk about it a good bit, but it's been awesome. He's always game to play, to rehearse, I can ask him questions about even just outside of GH, like industry stuff. And he's been around the block. He's done it before. I do kind of like that, you know, the guy who plays my father and the guy who plays my brother, they kind of take those actual roles a little bit in my life and so it kind of mirrors it, and that's been great. I'm so stoked with my whole little family situation.
Yeah, it's not too shabby, as they say. Mm-mm. Now, you had only been on the show for a few months when you had to do a solo number in the nurse's ball. How nerve-wracking was that?
It was terrifying. I remember I had this big old scene, and Frank walked up right before the scene. He's like, "Do you sing?" I was like, "Yeah, kind of." He was like, "Oh, you're going to be on the nurse's ball." And I was like, and I didn't really know what it was. I was like, "Oh, okay." And then they're like, 5, 4. And I was like, "Oh, geez." And right before the scene threw me. They later explained what the word, someone played a joke on me. And it might've been Haley. I can't remember, but I was like, "What's the nurse's ball?" And they were like, "Oh, Google," or someone sent me the Magic Milo clip. And they were like, "This nurse's ball." And I thought that's all it was. Like, I didn't know. I was so concerned. And then thank goodness Frank, you know, was like, "Here's a great song." And he gave, and he's been, you know, really cool. So, yeah, I was petrified, but at the same time, you don't get the butterflies that you get on stage doing theater, with TV film and being in front of all your contemporaries, you know, it definitely created that. And so it gave that kind of opening night feel before the curtain opens up. And I missed that so much. So, so I love both performances at the nurse's ball just for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Am I remembering correctly that you were like in your dressing room talking to yourself, maybe giving yourself a pep talk before you had to go on set? Do you recall that?
I mean, that sound happens like more than it should, so I don't know. But probably during that moment too, yeah.
Something to know about Mara: if you told her once, she will remember it.
No, this is scary.
She's my memory, trust.
Oh no.
Now, Chase got a proper girlfriend when Caitlin McMullen came aboard as Willow. So tell us about working with Katie.
She's awesome. She's so cool. She does her homework. She coaches like crazy and takes notes. And I mean, she's so, you know, devoted to the craft, if you will. And so it's a privilege, you know, being able to work with someone that, I mean, she'll get 4-page monologues and always does it in one take, and everyone just kind of like looks, and they're like a little upset because it makes us look bad, but at the same time, just like we marvel at it. And so she's a really, really cool gal.
Do you have your own favorite chillo moments, or ones that stand out to you as particularly memorable for one reason or another?
Oh man. I remember one of our first like date scenes where I had her to the house. We were eating, and right, she's supposed to be finishing up a bite at the top of a scene, and she took this monstrous bite. and they counted down, and then we started filming, and she's chewing and still chewing, and I'm trying so hard not to break, because time is money on that show, you know, and so you really don't want to blow a take if you can help it. And so we were doing everything to keep our composure. And then finally we just broke, and we were rolling, and it took us a second to like gain our composure again. But that's definitely a moment that sticks out.
Mm-hmm. Now one of Chase's key relationships on the show is actually with his best guy friend, Michael, although their friendship has been a little bit on the rocks of late. So you and Chad Duell seem pretty close. Tell us about your dynamic.
Oh yeah. He's a knucklehead, and when we're together, it's not good usually, when it comes to productivity. He's crazy talented. So it kind of allows him to be a knucklehead because of how good he is. And so, I've enjoyed our story arc of, you know, becoming friends, and then there's slight rifts, and then friendship always ends, but now it's like, we're in a, you know, bit of a storm right now in our storyline. So will we ever be friends, you know? But working with him, I mean, behind the scenes, we're usually, if someone needs to find me and I'm not in my room, they'll usually go to Chad's room and I'm in there.
You were telling me recently about some like pretty epic practical jokes that what was with the furniture rearranging?
This is a monthly thing for him, and I don't understand it. Because it'll be sometimes when we haven't spoken in weeks or something. Like, we're not doing this little back and forth thing. I'll just come back to my room on a Tuesday, and everything's upside down. And so, like, the first time you're like, "Oh, you got me." And the second time it's like, "Yep." And then after that, I'm like, "What are you doing?" But it's great. I mean, we have fun.
Clearly, clearly. All right. So 2019 was a big year for you on the personal front. You proposed, you got married. Tell us about the wedding. And I think I told you when I think Lauren posted highlights on Instagram and I was sobbing, sobbing.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's just been, I don't want to sound cheesy, but I'm speechless over the past 2 years. Like everything that's happened professionally and personally, it's just God's good. And I'm so thankful and I feel so blessed. And that's usually how I start every day, is just kind of grounded in that. And because of this, you know, awesome. And yeah, you can find problems with, I guess, anybody's life, but it's been so good. And yeah, 2019 was, pandemic hit 2020, right? Yeah. So 2019 was the last like good normal outcome. Yeah, I proposed while we were skiing, and then seven, eight months later, we get married, and we did our honeymoon, and we're still kind of like waiting for the ball to drop of like that honeymoon phase, but it's been, you know, a year and a half and hasn't yet, so we're just like, oh, let's keep going, and but yeah, we love marriage. It's a cool, for me, I think it's such a neat, I think it's such a neat thing to make a vow to somebody in today's day and age, because we don't, you know, it's the only time you vow something in your life to anyone, you know, and in our culture and society, I think to get married is kind of, you know, it's getting pushed, and like to get married young is kind of weird. And, you know, like the amount of people that pulled me aside when I was thinking about proposing, like, dude, you're in your 20s, man, what are you doing? Like, there's so much more fun to have, you know? And so it's funny, but I wouldn't change it for anything. Like it's the best.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so sweet. Okay. So 2020 professionally was pretty interesting. You got not one, but two big name actors cast as your fictional parents on GH, Kim Delaney as Jackie and Gregory Harrison as Gregory. So tell us about working with each of them.
It's a privilege. I mean, I don't know. Greg, I did my homework a little bit on both of them afterwards. Cause again, not, if you weren't in Princess Diaries or How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, probably didn't know who you are. Like that's just how it was. So I kind of did my homework on both and was like, wow, these are heavy hitters, you know? And they both bring it, and that you can tell when you're doing scenes, the way they can turn it on, it's like, whew, you've been there. So Greg's just an animal. He's so fit and energetic, and when you're around him you just like kind of want to be him a little bit, and Kim kind of instantly took on that kind of mom role to the way we would talk, and she asked how I'm doing, and it's quickly this mother-son rapport.
In the storyline now, the show is kind of like flirting with the possibility that Finn might be Chase's biological father, and I am less curious about whether that is true than if whether you have been calling Michael dad behind the scenes or having had any other fun with this possibility.
No, it's weird for both of us. We've really gone like brothery on it, that now that this is, you know, a possibility, we're like, okay, dad, you know, like it just makes you grandpa, you know, like, That's why you turn into soaps, though. It's wild. It's crazy. You don't know what's going to happen. And so, yeah, we laugh about it. But
Now, the other big question hanging over Chase at the moment is whether he and Willow can bounce back from Chase's pretend affair with Sasha. So do you think Chase deserves forgiveness?
Oh, wait, no. an outsider looking in, I see both sides. I see how you can't come back from that. And then at the same time, if you really try to understand his heart, you could be like, all right, your head was in the right place. Your delivery was a little off, but that it, you know, that it potentially, that it kind of worked in their favor. I think that gives them a few points. Cause you're like, well, maybe it wouldn't have worked if he didn't do it. He deserves a second chance or whatever, but who knows? There's a lot of ways they could take it right now. Every script they send me, I fly through it, because there's three options in my head that I think they could do. But
do you want to get a list? No. Keeping those close to the vest. Okay.
All right. So let's go back to March 2020. Mm. General Hospital shuts down production because of the pandemic for like an unknown period of time. You don't know how long. The rest of the country is making sourdough and banana bread, but in your household, you cook up a movie. So tell us the story of how, you know, Lauren came up with the idea to take the time to write a movie, how she came up with the idea for the specific movie, A California Christmas, and how like it came together so quickly.
Yeah, we got a call from the executive producer of the first film we did together, Roped. And it was kind of his idea initially. And he called us and he said, how quick could you guys put out a Christmas movie? And Lauren's a great writer. And Lauren's like, I could write one in a couple of weeks. And he goes, you know, our idea is there probably won't be a ton of Christmas movies floating around for 2020. And so it was kind of a lofty, let's see what happens. Let's see if we can get the script done. And then we got the script done. And then it was, let's see if we can put a crew together. And all the while we're on the phone with SAG going, what's allowed, what's not allowed. There was one production, I think a John Travolta production in Georgia going, and that was it. And so I think we were the second SAG thing out of the pandemic or during the pandemic, and super small crew, a lot of the same people we used from Roped. And we just took it day by day. And there were times that, you know, a false positive comes up or someone's positive from a, you know, some other thing. And so we'd shut down. And then all the while we're shutting down, we're getting word that GH might be coming back soon. And so I'm going, oh, you know, and this was such a, I don't want to say low budget, but we were really trying to get this done as quick as we could. We did 2 6-day weeks to pump out the whole thing, and we didn't have a casting director. We called, you know, people we knew and people that we admired, and we were like, hey, can you do this? It's going to be a labor of love. And then and during filming, you know, this is the first time Lauren and I have been on the back end as well. And so we're getting home going, did this work? We had to change this scene on the fly because of time, and did it, and things that actors don't usually think about. And, or, you know, do we cut this because overtime is going to be X for X amount of people and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we finished filming and we're like, do we even have a movie here? Like, we didn't know what, and we're seeing some of the dailies. We know there's some cute scenes going on but we didn't, you don't know. Sometimes it takes like halfway through filming to know like, okay, this is going to work or this isn't going to work. And I mean, you guys have seen there's $80 million movies with the world's best director and the world's best actors, and it just doesn't work. There's so many different elements that go into it. And so with ours, we're just like, man, I hope we can sell this thing. And we got a call within weeks after filming, and Netflix was like, we'll make it a Netflix original. And so we just lost our minds, and it was such a good situation. And so we were like, well, at least they got it. Hopefully it's not embarrassing when they watch it. And I mean, we constantly were kind of setting the bar low going, you know, well, at least someone took it, you know, no one will see it, but someone took it. And right. The day it came out, our phone, we both woke up to like 80-100 texts, and they're like, it's number one in the world. And we're like, and we just laughed. I mean, it was just utter disbelief. And so, yeah, it, I think it stayed in one for 7-10 days, something like that. It was wild. And so we still don't understand it. I mean, it's certainly a cute movie. It's a feel good thing. Definitely don't understand the success. I mean, it was number one in a lot of countries that don't celebrate Christmas. So like, you know, a California Christmas, we feel so fortunate, and, hopefully, I think another one's in the near future. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, tell us where you filmed it.
Filmed it in just outside kind of Napa area in a town called Petaluma and outside of San Francisco. And the production company, ESX, they've got a lot of ties up there, so we can find locations a little easier.
Rent a ranch? Like.
Yep.
Air ranch and bee?
Yeah, literally.
Do you have like favorite scenes from it? We've both watched it. You got two Jews watching A California Christmas.
That's right.
I love that. Thank you. That's so awesome. Let's see. Favorite scenes. There were a lot of scenes that we just laughed the whole time. The sex scene was kind of funny because we were on a hill and the grass was literally like titanium grass. I don't know what it was, but you'd put a blanket down and then sit on the blanket and then like 100 bristles just go up through the blanket. And so when we like, I'm on my back and it's killing me. And then I like roll over and Lauren gets on top and then we'd have to cut. So I'd pull out all the pieces of grass that were stuck in her butt and like in the jeans, you know, and I mean, like it's the cut's good, the edit's good, you know, but in the moment it was, we're losing light. We gotta wrap the crew. We gotta this, there's grass in her ass, you know, like we're, I mean, just the funniest. So that's, we think back on that one kind of funny. And yeah, there were a number of scenes that were like, that didn't go as planned, but it worked.
Now, obviously, you have worked together before, but now you're married. What was it like for you to sort of take a step back and sort of have the getting to know each other period, you know, but now on camera?
That's interesting. Yeah, because in Roped, it was, we really didn't know each other. And we had that. I think this is a lot easier. I mean, now we know each other so well. And I thankfully had a strong mom. So, it's cool when my wife's in a, I mean, technically, you know, I co-produced and she executive produced. So she was my boss and that's not an issue for me. I've never, you know, we have like a really neat understanding at home of, you know, who makes what decisions. And we really like our dichotomy here. And when it comes to work, I give ideas and I think this is going to work. And she'll either take it and be like, that's a great idea. Or she'll be like, no, it's not going to work. And I brush it off and it's gone in a second, you know? So, we're thankfully, and this is only one project, who knows what the future is going to hold, but, we work very well together. And that definitely saved us, I think. Just that being the case, I'm sure it would have been a disaster if we didn't work well together.
So you said you woke up to this, you know, news about how well it was doing and just laughed, but like, did you do anything to celebrate? Like, what was it like just living in your house, looking at each other going, we have the number one movie in the world on Netflix? Like, what?
I think that's kind of what it was we would dig. Because how do you celebrate that? You know, you go, this is great. So what's for lunch? You know, like there's like when it comes to like success of a movie or fame in general or your career taking off, there's this neat like, wow, this is a one in a million, or I'm so thankful, I'm so blessed, whatever it is. But then it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to go do the laundry now, you know. So we've probably said 40 times to each other since December 14th, I think, when it came out. We just look at each other and we're like, how in the world? And it's something special, you know, it's something you can't dwell on. You can't focus on it. You can't let it go to your head or your heart. But you can always look back and have like a little fond thing of like, oh, we did this, we created this, and people responded to it. And it wasn't full of violence. It wasn't full of sex. It wasn't full of swearing, and the world still responded to it. And in a world where to have a hit show, you know, think of Game of Thrones and Euphoria and all great shows, but it's like brothers and sisters are doing each other and young kids are doing each other. I mean, it's like the sex sells. And to be able to be like, guess what? We prayed around a table and we did this and people still liked it, you know? And that to me is maybe what I'm most proud of is we were capable of doing that. And that's a hard thing. You know, as an actor, like where's your you know, morals and values and integrity, and like all everyone's level is different, but trying to float that through each of your projects. And so for us to be able to do something that's just fun and feel good and it be successful is kind of like, yeah, like that feels good, you know? Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Now, as you mentioned, so good that there will be a sequel, California Christmas City Lights. So now, based on just sort of the genesis of this whole project, did you ever imagine when you were working on it that there would be another one or could be a series even?
No way. I mean, not in a million years. We have ideas on what two would be and if there was a third, what third could be, you know, and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, no, literally... what was it, 6, 4, 5 months ago, we just like, man, did we waste a lot of money? You know, I mean, we had no idea. And so, yeah, this is a complete dreams do come true, miracles happen, whatever you want to call it. Guy, we got lucky and that's it.
Well, is there anything for the Christmas, California Christmas fans that you can tease about the next one? Is it even written?
It's in the process. Lauren's putting in the hours this week, next week. I mean, she's really cranking it out now. And it's good. I get to peek, I get to help here and there. And it's the maybe there's a slight chance that she gets to see some of Joseph's old world.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He gets pulled into that, and then there's
the city lights, I guess.
That's potentially what it could be.
Right.
So yeah, it might be they end up in like a San Francisco world, and she sees a little bit of his old life. And is that good? Is that bad? Do they want that? Do they want the, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, has it sparked, you know, a desire to start working on other projects together or creating other scripts or movies that you can do?
We would do 50 cheesy movies together all in a career, 100%. She's way more actory. She has like these, she would totally do like gnarly projects that take her there and all this stuff. And I'm just like, no, let's just bounce up and down on a motorcycle and call it a day. yes, we would work together all day, every day. You know, I think, I don't know if people would eventually get bored of that, so probably won't, but you know, every blue moon, maybe every 5 years or something, we do a movie together. But yeah, we loved it.
Yeah. She's great. I fell in love with her from that movie.
Right. Oh, before. Thank you. Yeah. She's a star, dude. She's such a good actress. And, yeah, we have fun.
And you really, you know, there is a philosophy that sometimes real life couples don't bring the chemistry on camera, but you both certainly did.
We so, did? Oh, good.
Yes, that's good too.
Cool.
You got it.
Thanks.
We, of course, chuckled at the description of your character as looking like he could be on a soap opera. Whose idea was that?
Isn't that great? That was actually, who was that? So we do like structure passes. So Lauren writes it and then she gives it to a guy to do a kind of a structure pass to see if the structure's working. And then a guy to do a comedy pass. And it was the comedy guy and his name is John Ducey. And he's so funny. And yeah, I think that was one of his marbles. And it was so good. We both read it and we were like, of course, this is perfect. I knew a lot of the fans responded to that. So that was awesome.
I have one just little technical question. Talk me through how the calf birthing scene came to be.
That was like, really cool.
How did it happen? Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually a cool, for Lauren and I, one day we're like, oh, I want my director, you know, steps. We were sitting behind the camera the whole time going, okay, what are you doing with the DP and the director? And so basically they filmed the cow just sitting there normal. And then on the monitor, they drew a line where the situation from the cow's rear end to Lauren would take place. And so they don't move the camera. They don't move the setup or anything. So they film the cow and then they film Lauren standing with legs. And we actually had a crew member holding cow legs on where the cow was and kind of like moving them around and the goop and soak them with the goop. And you've seen, so even like high budget stuff, you've seen births not work. And mm-hmm. So we were just like, man, I hope this kind of worked. And I was so impressed with the final
oh, yeah.
Product. And there was, I remember one tweet, someone tweeted something. It was like, I watch California Christmas, or I want to watch a movie called California Christmas for the this. And instead I got, and it was like a still of Lauren with like legs and she's like, you know, pulling out the things. Oh, so funny. But I was super impressed. So basically they film one side, they don't move the camera, they write something on the monitor, and then they film the other side, and then in post they merge it together.
Well, it was very impressive. I will say on the day that I watched it, I had a big craving for like a steak or a burger, maybe not so much after it. Seriously.
Your big meal during it, like, oh.
Didn't feel the same.
Well, when you think back, Josh, on the version of Josh Swickard that like strolled into the General Hospital studio to report for your first day of work as Chase and where you are today, how do you think landing the job changed your life?
Oh, I mean, in every way. It's so many hours of work. So just logistically, it changed my life in that way of you're always doing it. But it was a different level of work that I wasn't used to. I mean, I came from SoulCycle, which was a very demanding, you know, teach three classes a day and you're either eating, sleeping or working out, you know, and that was it. And, but you'd probably have to ask like a shrink, but I'm sure it changed my, my confidence and it changed my demeanor and in some way. And, it's humbled me in a lot of ways. You just, it's hard and you see so many talented people and you're just like, man, that's awesome. And so it's a humbling experience. And, but I'm very grateful for it. I'm grateful for the person it's slowly turning me into.
That's amazing. Well, before we let you go, anything you want to say to the GH fans who have become such fans of yours over the past few years?
Ooh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, everyone said going in when I first booked the job, they're like, oh, don't worry. Daytime fans, they'll stick with you, or daytime fans, they're loyal, or they're ruthless, but they're loyal, you know? And boy, it's true. They have your back, you know? I hate using this word so many times, but it's humbling because to me, it's me. And so that someone wants to watch my work or that wants to watch what we're doing, is like puzzling and then an honor at the same time. So whoever's been watching my work or GH or California Christmas or whatever, just thank you. It means the world to myself and to Lauren.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
So much gratitude here, guys. I love this.
I know.
And we look forward to seeing what's next for Chase and what's next on Netflix for you.
Totally.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was good to see you guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Josh Swickard for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.